Ezekiel 16, verse 49 reads, "Behold, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom, pride, fullness of bread, and abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy, and they were haughty and committed abomination before me. Therefore I took them away as I saw good." Now, last week I referred and spoke a little bit about the sins of Sodom. This week I want to enlarge upon that a little bit more. And I want to show you something that I don't know that I'd ever seen before, but there is a line of regression or steps that happened in Sodom that led her to where she was when the Lord destroyed her. Now, I think we all understand that immorality has been around for years and years. I mean, there's never been a generation that there wasn't people who were doing wrong things. That there was, I mean, there's just always been immorality. But in different nations, those nations generally don't start off as being immoral. They degrade over a period of time. It took the Roman Empire 600 years, but they degraded over a period of time. Sodom. Folks, Sodom didn't necessarily start out to be a bad city. I'm sure there was probably some good people that were there. We know that Lot was there. He moved into the city. It probably wasn't quite as bad as it was when he left the city. But the point is that over a period of time, some steps took place. Things happened that caused them to be that immoral. When we look at our nation, and don't get me wrong, I love our nation. I don't want to live in any other nation on the face of this earth. I love the United States of America. Even in the earliest days and infancy of the United States, there were people who were immoral. There were people that did things that were wrong. But we did have a nation that tried to base its government and tried to do things by the Bible. And as a group, as a nation, immorality was not as rampant. Down through the ages, it's always been there, but it's just gotten worse and worse and worse. And I think these steps are going to show us what has happened. I mean, it makes total sense to me when I look at what he says were the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah. It starts off with pride and it ends with abomination. And there's you can just see this line of regression as we go along. So as we look at it, I want everybody to, we can only judge ourselves. Now, we as Americans can judge our nation. We can judge and see what we see happening in our nation. I, as the head of my household, can look and I can judge and see what's going on in my own household. But as an individual, I can't judge you and you're not to judge me. That's between me and the Lord. But if I find that I am guilty of such things, then I need to be willing to do something about it. If I see my nation is guilty, then I need to get out and vote. And I need to vote for those candidates that I believe give us the best chance of bringing our nation back to what she should be. If I see it happening in my neighborhood or in my county, same thing. State, same thing. If I see it happening in my family, then I need to take steps to do what I can to try to change that within my own family. Now, here's the deal about families. I can talk bad about my family, but I don't want you talking bad about them. You don't want me coming into your household and jumping on your kid because they did something immoral, so you jump on them for me. How about that? I'll take care of my family and you take care of yours. And you know what? If we start that from the ground up, we can bring back morality. So it's not we can't just look at it and say, oh, well, it's happening and it's too far gone. I'll just throw up my hands and quit. Folks, God didn't give us the right to stop. He didn't give us the right to quit or to roll over and play dead. He left us here to continue to battle evil from the word go until we're patted in the face with the shovel, so to speak. So we need to become more active and less passive in dealing with immorality and with sin, and it needs to start with self. But let's just look at this, and I want you to understand he's talking to his people when he's telling them about the sins of Sodom. And he's saying, these other cities are just as guilty as they are. And you have become no better than they are, were. So let's look, first of all. He says, behold, look, this was the iniquity of thy sister Sodom. And then he starts off. The first problem she had was pride. Now we discussed this a little bit last week. It's that arrogance, that sense of self-worth that's inflated, that thinking that someone is better than anyone else and that they're stronger than anyone else and that nobody can overtake them. That kind of exalted opinion of self, whether it be nation, city, whether it be a family or an individual, pride is one of those things. We saw last week, God doesn't like pride. Matter of fact, he says he hates that haughty look. But I want to, before I go farther with pride, I need to say this. I didn't bring this out last week. We do need to have godly pride. We do need to have self-respect. We don't need an inflated sense of self-respect. We don't need an inflated sense of our self-worth. But we need a healthy self-respect. We need a healthy, godly respect or godly pride. What am I talking about there? Folks, what I'm talking about is that pride that makes us want to do what's right. That pride that when we look in the mirror and we're going to town and we realize our hair is not combed or our dress is inappropriate, we change our clothes and we clean up before we go to town. Let me tell you, before Vicki and I, before we went on a date, my car got washed and waxed more in those 2 years of dating than it has since, period. I'd wash it twice a week and wax it at least once a month. You could almost eat off of the tires. I kept it so clean. Why? Because I would not dare take her on a date in a dirty car. There were no Coke bottles in the floorboard. There was no trash in the we had ashtrays back then. There wasn't any trash in that ashtray. There wasn't any ashes either. See what I'm saying? She didn't see me unless my hair was combed, my teeth was brushed, and I had on some high karate. Y'all remember high karate, some of you men? Supposed to make the girls go wild. I think it ran them away from me, but I had on some sort of cologne. I made sure everything was in place. Why? I had a little self-pride, a little self-respect. Man, I look at what people wear today and I wonder, where is your self-respect? What is going on here? I look at the way people act and the things they do and I'm thinking, where's your self-respect? Parents, we need to teach our children self-respect. I know times change, and I know dress, clothing, styles change, but modesty is still modesty. Decency is still decency. We need to have enough pride in ourselves that we take care of ourselves. That's not a puffed ego. That's not thinking oneself more than they are or better than they are. Just because I take care of myself don't make me feel like I'm better than you. Just because I try to dress up and look decent when I go to the movies or wherever I'm going doesn't mean that I'm making myself better than you. It just means that I have some godly pride. I'm going to use the old boy sitting right over here. I happen to know this kid in high school got up every morning and ironed even his t-shirts. He ironed his pants. He ironed his... Did you iron your socks? Probably not, because they were going to be in boots. But he ironed his shirt. You say, well, where was his mama? She was proud of him. He didn't go to school unless he was ironed. His hair was in place. That's because he wasn't better than anybody else, and he didn't carry himself that way. He just took pride in himself. So there's nothing wrong with having enough pride to take care of yourself, to look your best, to act your best, to do your best. There's right in that. But it's when we're puffed with that pride and arrogance that makes us think we're better than everybody else. And we have that haughty spirit. Did you realize the pride he's talking about is where we feel like we're the most important people in the room and the most important people on the face of the earth? Look at our nation. I'm going to tell you something. Yeah, I want America to be great again. But I don't ever want her to get to the point, like I believe that sometimes we present this idea, that we know what's best for everybody else on the face of this earth. And we want to try to make everybody else just like America because we think we're the greatest. Anybody see that but me? I see it. One of the things I'm so glad our missionaries finally learned. We had missionaries for years that would go to these places, and because of American arrogance, we tried to make the people in Nigeria be Americans. They're not Americans. They don't have that culture. But now we finally figured it out. We go to Romania, and instead of trying to make the Romanians Americans, we're getting into their culture. We're learning how they think and how they act and what's important to them. We finally figured it out that America doesn't have a monopoly on what's right and wrong and how to do things. Let me tell you something. You go to a church service in Mexico and you'd probably think in a Baptist church that you were in a holy roller meeting. Because those people like to sing and they like to get loud and they get, you know, they're excited about their service. They come up here and they think we're probably at a funeral. Because we don't have the excitement that they've got. Guess what? Go to Mexico, get in there, and they'd be excited with them. Probably nearly preach the preachers half to death because of the excitement. You see what I'm saying, though? Let's not ever become so arrogant that we as a nation, we as a state, or we as a people, a family, a person, or even a church get to the point where we think we have a monopoly on what's right and wrong and that we're the greatest thing since Cracker Jacks on the face of the earth. Because that's what happened to Sodom. Pride and arrogance. They just thought they was the greatest thing on the face of the earth, that nobody could overtake them, nobody could cause them to fall. They were just going to be like that way forever, and it just got worse and worse. Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 17 tells us that pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. Oh, how the mighty fall, right? Those that think they can't fall, that they can't be touched, they really get humbled when they finally fall. Look at the next thing that it is there in that verse. Fullness of bread. The next step. Fullness of bread. Do you know what that means? They have prosperity. That means that they have everything that they possibly need. We've amassed all of this. We are self-sufficient. When someone feels they are self-sufficient, you know what they're saying? I don't even need God. And we talked about this a little bit in the love of money. What about that farmer that had barns and he had such a good crop and he filled them up and he built, tore those down and built bigger barns and filled them up and then he foolishly said, oh, I've got enough goods laid up for all these years. In other words, I am self-sufficient. I don't need God. I don't need anybody. I'm just going to sit back and take mine ease and eat and drink and be merry and have a high old time. And he died that night because, folks, he wasn't depending on God anymore. This city had become puffed with pride and they were rich. They were self-sufficient. Prosperity had gone to their head. I want you to look with me at something that God said in Deuteronomy chapter 6. And it shall be, when the Lord thy God shall have brought thee into the land which he sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities which thou buildest not, and houses full of all good things which thou fillest not, and wells digged which thou diggest not, vineyards and olive trees which thou plantest not, when thou shalt have eaten and be full, then beware lest thou forget the Lord which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. Thou shalt fear the Lord thy God and serve him and shalt swear by his name. Do you know what he's warning them against? He's warning them against self-sufficiency. He's warning them against letting their prosperity ruin them. taking them away from God. Let's talk about that in America for just a moment. Do you realize that as an early nation, we didn't have a fullness of bread? People had to work hard for what they got. When the first settlers came over, the pilgrims, most of them died the first winter. They had to work hard to make a living. Those early settlers had to make a living where, you know, they had to take the trees down and get the stumps up. They had to work hard at it. And for years and years, it was difficult to make a living, and they had to claim the land. You see what I'm saying? There wasn't a fullness of bread. There wasn't a over-prosperity. Does that mean that there weren't some rich people? No, there's always been some folks that had money. But the majority of the people had to work hard, and they had to pray hard, and they had to trust God to get them from one week to the next, one day to the next. Folks, when they went to church in the early days, sometimes the prayers would be 2 to 3 hours long, the sermons longer than that, and they would sit there with muskets on their lap because they were in danger. They had to trust God. There wasn't a prosperity at that time. But then our nation began to grow, and we began to prosper. And we began to have a fullness of bread. Do you realize that there are very few countries in this world that have grocery stores as full as we have? I can remember missionaries talking about going, and there would be one day a week when you could buy bread at the market. One day a week. And if you found things at the grocery store, it was very limited in quality and quantity. Folks, there are places in this world right now, they don't even have grocery stores, and they have to eke out a living from the ground. I want to tell you something. Those people probably have more faith than most people in the United States. Why? Because prosperity hasn't ruined them. They don't depend on a savings account. They don't depend on a 401k. They're not depending on their checking account. They don't even have jobs. You make more money in a day than some of those people will make in a year. Even today. Prosperity can ruin people. It can ruin nations. It's a downward spiral. You know, people say, I wish I was a millionaire. Well, you know, if I was a millionaire that would use the money God's way and would continue to trust God, that might not be too bad. But you know what? I think God knows that money would probably ruin Bobby. So that's why I don't have any. Because He don't want to ruin me. Prosperity, if you're not careful, will ruin you. It will cause you not to do the right things. It causes you not to depend on God. It causes you to say, I'm a self-made man. I don't need God. And folks, when a nation gets to the point where her prosperity has got in the way of her trusting God, then she's ripe for a fall. That's immoral. It's immoral when we're trusting something other than God. Let me tell you something. We have a great military. But without God, that military can't do what it needs to do. If you're just trusting your military, you better turn around and start trusting God. Because military is made up of human beings. And human beings are fallible. They make mistakes. And there hadn't been an army yet that somewhere down the line couldn't be defeated. They've all been defeated. Look at Napoleon at Waterloo. Look at Hitler. And just because we were on the side of right doesn't necessarily mean that we can't be defeated. All it takes is one mistake for things to change and make things differently. So a nation don't need to stop depending on God. She doesn't need to become so full of bread and self and let prosperity ruin her. Then the next one, I've got to hurry. The next one is idleness. Idleness of time. Let me turn back over to Ezekiel 16 again. I want to read it. It says, fullness of bread and abundance of idleness was in her. Idleness. You know, Is there anything wrong with having a little downtime? No. But I want to ask you a question. Who set the example for the work week? God set the work week at 6 days. He rested on the seventh. We've cut the work week back to 5, and we've cut it from candle cane to 40 hours. There are a lot of places where they work 4 days. Some of them work 4 8s, most of them work 4 10s. It's still 40 hours, but they've got 3 days of idleness. I was always told growing up an idle mind is the devil's workshop. Now you say, okay, well that gives me 3 days to work around the house. Or 2 days to work around the house and 1 day to go to church. And you know what? A lot of people do that. But when we get to the point that our prosperity is such that our idle time is spent doing nothing but recreation. Recreation, folks, is necessary, but you can do it overboard. Am I making sense? In Mark chapter 6, Jesus finds the disciples busy working. They hadn't even taken time out to eat. He says, come away into a deserted place and let's rest a little while. The Lord knows we need rest. And we need some recreation to get our mind off of things. There's nothing wrong with fishing. There's nothing wrong with hunting. There's nothing wrong with going boating, bowling. Well, you know, those things, as long as it's not illegal or immoral, against the law, whatever, then go for it. But when it becomes all-consuming, and we can't wait for the end of the work week just so we can go and spend all of our time recreation and not serving the Lord and not taking care of other things that are important. See what I'm saying? They became an idleness. Even Adam worked. His job was to take care of the garden. Take care of the garden. 6 days he'd take care of the garden. Seventh day he'd... But here's the thing. Before sin, that work was not work. It wasn't a drudgery. There wasn't any thorns and thistles. There wasn't any bugs eating the plants. And if they were, they were supposed to. So we can become a nation where idleness or recreation becomes the God. Does that make sense to you? I mean, it does to me. How many people today will skip church to go watch a National Football League football game? How many will spend thousands of dollars today to go watch a football game? Folks, I don't even watch it on TV. There were people yesterday that probably had other things that were important, but a college football game was more important than anything else. And they put everything else behind them. Is there anything wrong with going and watching a football game? Absolutely not. But when it becomes all-consuming, and that's all you can think about, and that's all you want to do, then we've made a downward spiral. When recreation is more important than anything else on the face of the earth, that's about it's about self. It's about what I want to do. I want to do this, and this is what I do to have fun, and I'm going to have fun, and I don't care whatever everything else can fall down around my ears, but I'm going to go have fun. It becomes worshiping the creature more than the Creator. About the next one. Ignoring the needy. It's selfish, isn't it? Look again. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. Now, let's stop here and say this. I don't think this is talking about welfare programs. I think that there are people that really and truly deserve and need certain programs. It's just like what they call SNAP today. We called food stamps back in the 70s. That program was never designed for people to live off of. That program was designed to help you to get between, from one job to the next. There are people that still need on that today. There are single mothers that are struggling, trying to make ends meet and put food on the table for teenage boys that eat like horses. Those mamas need that. As soon as they can get off of it, they should. But then you got people that are fully capable and they don't really have to have those things. They're bilking the system. I got a problem with people that are physically capable of working but who are unwilling to work. My Bible tells me if you're unwilling to work, then you don't eat. That's not me being cruel. They should be working. This is not talking about those type programs. This is talking about you see a fella and you absolutely know that he needs something and you have the ability to help him out. He's down on his luck. He's got so much pride that he won't ask for help. Let me tell you all a story about that. My great-grandfather didn't have a lot. But every week he'd say, "Son, can you carry me to town Saturday and let me get me a bill of groceries?" And he'd go up there and he'd buy $10 or $12 worth. Didn't have a whole lot of money, but he held his head high. He had a little bit of pride. Good self-pride. I'm making my way. I'm paying my way. His son came in from Washington and said, "Oh, you deserve food stamps." My grandpa said, "I don't want them," but my uncle went and got them anyway. My grandpa never went to a grocery store again as long as he lived. He was so ashamed. He deserved them. But it shamed him so bad because he was dependent on the government. Nowadays you got people that brag about it. This ignoring the needy, folks, it's an idea of selfishness. There's still needy people out there that are, it's legitimate, it's genuine. If we see our brother have need, 1 John 3:17, and we help him out, if we're able to help him out, and we do, then we've shown that we have the love of God in us. We all get down and out from time to time. We all may have need. It may not be money that we need. We may need a shoulder to lean on. We may need somebody to sit with us during a crisis. We all get in need. But if we're so selfish with our time and with our money, "Oh, I can't stay with you because I got something more important to do over here. I got a golfing trip over here." Yeah, I know you need me to be with you, but this is more important to me. I'm so selfish that I'd rather do this than to stay here with you during your hour of need. Man sitting beside the bed of his wife, and she's trying to have a child, and they both may die. And he's needing his best friend to be right there with him. And his best friend said, "Well, I'm sorry, but I got a trip planned. I'm going on this trip." Boy, what a friend is he. When we get like Sodom and we're so selfish that the needs, the legitimate needs of the poor and needy don't faze us anymore, that we're not going to spend time and effort and money to help them out, then we have fallen way down the tree. Our pride is so messed up. So you see, pride leads, and prosperity lead to worship of self and selfishness. And that leads then to the abomination that he talks of in the next. "And they were haughty and committed abomination before me." That's the homosexuality that we talked about. All of this led to nothing more than a city who was concerned about self-gratification. I'm going to satisfy me. I don't care what happens to anybody else. I don't care what happens to you. I don't care what happens to the poor, as long as my desires are satisfied. You tell me if we're living in a me nation today. Yeah, we've still got good folks out there. There's still people that care about the poor and needy. There's still people that have godly pride and don't have the wrong kind of pride. There's still good people that will help you out and that care about what's right and wrong. But it seems to me like we've got a whole nation full of people that's about me. It's about what I want. Could care less about you. I mean, look in these big cities, people just drive by and shoot people. They don't care about their needs. They don't care about what they want. It's all about me. And that's what's happening. And that's what's happened. And that's what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah. It started off with pride and arrogance, and it led to nothing but a satisfaction of self. It doesn't have to be that way. It starts with us. If we find that we have that kind of attitude in our life, if pride and arrogance and prosperity and idleness of time have caused us to be so selfish and so self-centered that we don't care about the needs of anybody else, then it's time for us to get to the altar of repentance. Ask God to forgive us and to help us to become the kind of people, the humble people that care about other folks, that puts the needs of others and puts the service and the worship of God above all else, and we come down at the bottom somewhere. Remember Church of Christ had a bus at Dirk's there years ago, painted it blue and white, and it had joy wrote on the side. I kind of like that. Jesus, others, and yourself. And if you put Jesus first, others second, and yourself last, you know what you're going to have? Joy. Going to have joy. Now, I don't know how this message may have touched you. I'll tell you this again. If we're guilty of these things, God still loves us. He loves guilty people. He's willing to forgive. Lost friend, He loves you too. And He's willing to save you today if you'll repent of your sin and trust Jesus as yourself.